Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to On the Continent, your definitive guide to the week in European football. I'm Dotun Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm David Cartledge.
On this edition, Barcelona coach Xavi falls on his sword. Was it Villarreal what done it? Also, Inter are back on top. It was Lautaro what done it. Is he a keeper? And unbeaten all season and with only one draw in 19, where did PSV find the winning formula? David, well, we have to start with you, I suppose. Where did it all go wrong for Xavi at Barcelona? How we got to where we are with him?
Yeah, to start here, I think, you know, you've got to look at when he came back. So he turns up halfway through the season in November 2021, takes over from Ronald Koeman, who had just been getting outrageous pelters all season. Nobody ever wanted Koeman there. He goes... He takes Barca from 9th to 2nd. They finish, you know, not that was really impressive, I think, for him to come back and considering the situation that the club was in on the field and off the pitch, as we all know, with their financial insecurities that they have. In his first full season, wins La Liga, wins the cup as well, a double. Great. It's looking like the project's, you know, heading in the right direction. They're playing some, you know, it's not the football that I think a lot of people thought Xavi would profess. I think people were thinking this very eye-catching, attractive style of football, given the player that he was and how he, you know, operated as an incredible central midfielder. But they win. They return to winning ways. And again, with their off-field issues, with financial securities, they need to win. There's a win-now feel there. This can't be a project that takes time to develop. There was pressure on him immensely from the get-go. And I think the problem for Xavi is he overachieved very early on in his tenure, created unrealistic expectations there. And one bad summer, last summer, in terms of the players that they brought in, has ultimately hindered his style that he wanted, this intense pressing style, very quick movement that he professes that he wants as he tried to, you know, progress the team. Ultimately, they couldn't do that. They were hurt by a lot of injuries as well. And it's all come to fruition now with him saying that he made the decision to go in the summer. And I think I believe him. I think he witnessed what was going on at the club and how they were operating, how they would be operating in the future as well, the restrictions that they have. And that's why he's come to the decision now. I think it's too much for him to take on, to handle.
January then is the month of doom for Xavi. No, that's a David Carsledge line that I've just sneaked. But genuinely, though, were you surprised?
I think I'm surprised at the speed with which it accelerated. And of course, I'm not the only person who's surprised. The real surprise was for Joan Laporta, the president. It didn't seem that he knew it was coming. Now, there are a lot of things that he doesn't know, it appears, but we'll get onto that. But as David has said elsewhere, is really accelerated this month, because the bit that moves him out of the zone of unlimited credit is not any of the stuff that happens in the first half of the season, is when they go out to Saudi and they lose El Clasico 4-1. Because that they have a match where they need to turn up, give a performance that shows, even if they're going to struggle to win La Liga back, that they're serious for the rest of the season. And they get absolutely hammered. They defend terribly. They are terrible in every which way. Real Madrid is so much better than them. And obviously losing a showpiece in that manner is hugely embarrassing. Now, Xavi comes out afterwards and says, you know, that's the worst we've played since I've been in charge, basically. But admitting that isn't quite enough, especially with some of the performances that follow. And I think you look at, clearly in terms of him making this public at least, the 5-3 defeat at home to Villarreal at the weekend is the straw that breaks Campbell's back. And that is bad enough in isolation, because as David was talking about last time he was on it, Villarreal are a mess this season. They're not good.
Yeah.
And they go to Camp Nou and score 5 goals. And of course, Xavi's complaining about the refereeing decisions and all that sort of stuff when they don't get a penalty.
It's deflecting, 3-3. I think, you know. Deflecting. There's almost a hopelessness tone there to his words, what become. And you're right, you bring up Saudi as well, because I think he bet everything on that. He put all of his chips there and said, this is where we will kick on. This is going to reignite our season. It didn't. They conceded 19 goals in January alone. 19 goals.
That's extraordinary.
They were blown away regularly. It's not a case of just narrowly losing, little decisions going against them, which he did, you know, go towards. It wasn't that. They were blown away. I think a lot of it is on him, but also there's other things out of his control. I think the injury to Gavi really, really killed them. He was kind of their safety net.
Is this the bit where we've learned that Gavi's actually more important than Pedri?
I think it's equal. I think, right. But there's an argument that you could make for Gavi being more important, because in that season when they did do the double, Gavi papered over a lot of cracks in front of that defence in terms of covering them, and they had a brilliant defensive record in terms of the goals that they conceded. However, underlying numbers, it was unsustainable. There was no way they could continue that. There was no way that they were going to carry on and be this amazing, resolute defensive team.
So is it as simple as this season losing Gavi and Tushayan to injury?
Considerably so, yeah. Right. Yeah. And I feel for him, because, and don't get me wrong, he's made some mistakes. I think some of his changes, some of his game management have been poor. Absolutely. I just think there's been a lot of factors out of his control. And bigger picture, again, going back to the summer, the players that they brought in, yes, there were names. Gundogan, João Félix. These are big names, solid European names. Okay. But they were not players that, you know, helped Xavi's system, helped him progress it, how he wanted to play, this intense high-pressing style. These players aren't really like that.
Do you reckon they kind of lured him into playing a slightly more open game that doesn't really suit them? Because I think when you look at this, I mean, they always had, as you said, quite a risky way of defending. But this season, I think it's not just, obviously the style has been a thing for a while. That has been a disappointment to a lot of Barcelona fans who are expecting something else. And they're expecting something else because a year before he got the job, he was giving interviews to everyone saying, If I had Barcelona, if I was the coach of Barcelona, this is the way that I would play. We would play like real Barcelona. And then he turns up and it's not like that at all. Now, obviously, he's partly stymied by the players they have and then the players they recruit and the fact that it's a post-Messi, post-Iniesta, post-him environment, I suppose you could say. But I think you look at not just the 5-3 defeat at home to Villarreal. I think you look at the previous big home defeat where they concede 5 to Girona. And Girona are a team who, also Catalan, but not even the second biggest team in Catalonia, by the way. Top of the league. As we're speaking, 11 points clear of Barcelona at the top of La Liga with a micro budget, even compared to what Barcelona have got. We know Barcelona have got diminished means. They don't have anything like the resources of Barcelona. And you've got a team there who come to Montjuic, play them off the pitch, score a load of goals. They say, well, can you really talk about, you know, diminished means and that's why you can't play great football? Because we're playing great football with a fraction of the money. We're playing great football at your ground.
Yeah, and every Barca fan's also, that was a turning point as well, because every Barca fan's watching that and thinking, that's what we could be. Oh, that's what we want. We want to play like that. Mm. Why can't we play like that? They've got less than us, as Andy has said. And they did head towards this possession-based style. And I always remember Vicente del Bosque when he used to speak about his Spanish team, which of course Xavi was a key part of. And he used to say their best form of defence was that possession game. Look, if we keep the ball, the other team can't get the ball and take it up the field. So that was always key for them. I think Xavi looked at that and said, right, we'll move to this possession-based style and we can protect our poorest defence, these weaknesses that we clearly have in defence. It hasn't worked because they simply haven't got that possession style together. It has not worked. And teams have ended up taking advantage of that and they look far off the pace of others.
What do you make of Xavi saying that he had made the decision at the beginning of the season, almost? Because that undermines, doesn't it, what all the other efforts that the team might have made over the course of the season. If his mind hasn't been on the job.
I think that's maybe a little bit harsh, but I think you're definitely right in saying that it's worth examining why he thought at the end of the season, at the beginning of the season, I have to go. And I think it goes back to what David was saying about that sort of overachievement in one way of winning the double, which should have been a joyous season for Barcelona. But because they failed so badly in the Champions League in that same season, you know, they go out in the group stage and, you know, they're drawn in an absolute pig of a group. You can't get away from that. And they are a rebuilding team. But I think maybe he had a little bit of a feeling of, okay, I've won the double, but does anyone really appreciate that? Like, maybe not. Because, of course, at Barcelona, they're always talking about where they are financially, where they need to go next financially, about the fact that their financial plan, their financial recovery plan, is tied to doing well in the Champions League. So even though he won the double, in certain sections of the club, he'll have been deemed to have failed because he didn't get them beyond the group stage of the Champions League, because everything, all this recovery, is predicated on them getting to at least, what, the quarterfinals every season?
Absolutely.
What Andy says there about underappreciation, Xavi himself has said, and he's talked to Pep Guardiola, apparently a mate of his, and he agrees coaches aren't valued. Is that a particular problem in Spain?
Yeah, I think it's a problem everywhere. I mean, yeah, it's definitely, especially at the very, very top. I think it's a problem everywhere, to be honest with you. And I think Xavi really, really felt it. And I think he's disillusioned by everything that does go on off the pitch. He just wants to focus purely on the football side of things. But at Barcelona, there's a lot going on everywhere for him.
You have a president who, when Laporta came out and gave his reaction to the Barcelona club website about how he felt about Xavi's decision to go. Firstly, he was a bit blindsided by it, wasn't he? Because like he found out about probably 20 minutes before Xavi told the press after that defeat to Villarreal. And secondly, he stood there and sort of kind of gaslighted everyone, really. He was just saying, well, we've stuck with Xavi because he's till the end of the season because he's a great champion and we believe in him. He's a great leader. You've stuck with him because you've got no option.
Yeah.
And then he stood there and said, well, economically and sportingly, this club's in a really great place. It's like, anyone who knows the slightest thing about Barcelona knows that's not the case.
Which is a blatant lie. And they've got another summer of it coming up as well, which could realistically be slightly worse. Because they're not going to compete with the top players who are available on the market. They're not going to go for your Mbappes, Osimhens, and all this, the top players who are going to be available. They as a club are going to have to borrow and steal again.
So if you are Laporta and you're looking for a successor to Xavi, what's realistic? Because I know what a lot of people out there are thinking, a lot of people listening to this are probably thinking, they'll have seen the names linked, they'll have seen Arteta, De Zerbi, Mourinho.
No, straight away. So, no.
On all three? Exactly.
So, yeah, on all three, on anyone. I've even seen somebody say, that, this is perfect for Klopp. No, Klopp's not going either. I don't think people really realise the extent of Barcelona's financial issues. They cannot be attracting any of those coaches. I think Mourinho is more of a stylistical, political one where he wouldn't come. The other two, they can't afford them. It's going to be Rafael Márquez, who's already at the club, in a coaching capacity, and Thiago Motta. If it's anyone outside of them, I've seen some wild talk of Frank Rijkaard as well, of all people, but it's going to be somebody on the basis of that.
I think Motta would be great, but he could get a better job than that, if we're being perfectly honest, couldn't he? Because of how well he's done at Bologna and the fact that PSG have been looking at him for a while. But I think what I was going to say is, like, I reckon people out there are listening to this and looking at the candidates and thinking Barcelona don't know what they're doing because there are so many diverse types of coaches. Now, look, that may well be the case, but I think you have to bear in mind that despite their diminished means, there will be agents, and one particular agent, like, throwing clients at them. That doesn't mean that they're necessarily thinking, oh yeah, well, you know, we'll go for De Zerbi, and if we don't get him, we'll go for Mourinho and all the rest of it. I mean, I do love the way Mourinho timed his break to Barcelona. I mean, it's magnificent, really. And of course, the fact that, you know, someone talking about the fact that, oh, well, Jorge Mendes has got a couple of clients at the club, in João Cancelo and João Felix, not permanent players, yeah, and players who they will struggle to keep financially as well. I guess what, as I said on the Ramble earlier in the week, where people will make the click is the fact that Deco's the sporting director. And that was one of the things, of course, him and Mourinho know each other very well from Porto, got the same agent. I mean, there are so many reasons why Mourinho to Barcelona would not work. And yet, you're talking about two really diminished brands, aren't you?
Yeah.
You know, two absolute giants of the game in Mourinho and Barcelona who look in the mirror and see something a bit different to what the rest of us see.
And what does Mourinho put first above anything, above style or anything? Winning. What do Barcelona need to do now more than anything because of the financial issues? Win.
However, Mourinho is or was Real Madrid. How's that going to sit?
No, I'm not.
It was Barcelona before he's Real Madrid.
Yeah. So. No, I'm not entertaining it. Like I said, I think it's Marquez or Motta. I think Mourinho would be hilarious on many levels. But I don't see it.
What about Xavi? When we look at his legacy at Barcelona, though, it feels like it's a legacy of two halves. On the one, our first half, winning the league and the cup, mm-hmm, and second half maybe, well, clearly not on that level.
I think what I'll remember most from Xavi at Barcelona is the extraordinary hope that he engendered in, like, a club that was in a hopeless place when he first arrived. It was amazing, the atmosphere that he created around the club.
Because he'd been a servant for the club. You know, people knew him.
One of the greatest ever players. Yeah. Yeah.
But one of the great football thinkers as well.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's what got people on board, really. Not that he was just a symbol of the club. He was a symbol of what they wanted to be and exactly what they wanted to see when they looked in the mirror. But I think it just quickly became clear that for all the things he could do, he's an inexperienced coach and it's an impossible job. I fail to see who could get them in a better position. Like, basically, everything that's going on upstairs, until that gets sorted out, they've got a huge problem and it will be tough for any coach.
Will he be back, Javi?
Yeah, he'll be back. Yeah, absolutely. I think it'll take some time out and what have you, but yeah, he'll be back. Look, he was a success at Barcelona. It was Barcelona who failed Javi.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So as we speak, the January transfer window is coming to an end. And one of the players that doesn't seem to have been linked with every other club, surprisingly perhaps, because he is having the season of his life in Serie A, is Lautaro, the Inter player who seems to be scoring for fun, averaging a goal per game, which just is remarkable when you think about it. And yet, he's kind of gone under the radar of, or has he? I'm sure people know what he's doing there, but why isn't he getting the kind of, you know, when you compare to a centre forward like Osimhen doing what he has done for Napoli, not doing any more for Napoli, but he's still being linked everywhere, isn't he?
Yeah, I think they're in slightly different situations. I mean, I guess with Lautaro, you start with the fact that he didn't have a particularly impressive World Cup, even though he ended up winning the World Cup, which is obviously the pinnacle for any player. Apart from a couple of nerveless penalties in shootouts, he didn't produce what they really wanted from him and what people really expected from him.
That was a year ago. That was over a year ago.
Yeah, you're right, it was. And I think a couple of things have changed for him. He's the captain of Inter now, and symbolically, for a centre-forward to be captain of Inter, I mean, you think, like, last weekend, when he came on and scored the winner against Fiorentina, 124th goal for the club, making him the highest overseas scorer for Inter, jointly with Mauro Icardi. And Mauro Icardi, when he became Inter captain, it completely changed everything. I mean, I still get the impression that Icardi's still really quite emotionally attached to Inter, despite all the fallouts, despite the fallout with Conte, despite the fallout with the ultras, the way he left, you know. Him and Wanda were like the king and queen of Milan. You know, that they have this apartment overlooking the San Siro. Sorry, I'm getting a bit lost in this. We're meant to be talking about Lautaro. Well.
No, I like it. Get lost in Mauro Icardi. If you're going to get lost in any player, then please.
Yeah, I think so. But I think that armband does something to a centre-forward at Inter. Because ever since he's been appointed the captain, as you've been saying, he's been fire. He's had great streaks for Inter before. And he's had moments where he's looked like genuinely one of the best strikers in the world. And I think this season he's looked like genuinely one of the best strikers in the world. But what he's taken on in terms of leadership, I think the club have done well around him, mind you, because you look at like the end of last season, they lose Edin Dzeko, who he plays really well with. They lose Lukaku, obviously in a lot of rancor, who he plays really well with, and they're good mates. They're very close. But the way in to deal with that, Marcus Thuram has been a massive hit for them, and they really click. And of course, they've got Alexis and Arnautovic to back him up. But I think if you're looking at Lautaro, you think, yeah, he really clicked with Lukaku. It was perfect. And he really clicked with Dzeko. And he really clicked with Thuram. Look, these are all great players, but he's the common denominator, isn't he? You know, so when we're talking about him, it's the goal record is great this season and globally. But like a lot of great players, like a lot of great forward players, to describe him just in terms of goals, it's almost a bit vulgar, isn't it? There's so much more to it than that.
There's so much more to him. And I think this season, again, he's shown his ability to be a goal scorer, though. I mean, his defensive effort, his effort for the team as a whole, and look at this, in the team, is designed that way, that they need Lautaro's presence, a player of his ilk. His defensive commitment has never, ever been in doubt.
While you're talking about that, actually, he came very close to signing for Atletico Madrid before he signed for Inter. Can you imagine?
Yeah, I know. He's one of those players, I think you can identify players and you can say, oh God, he's just perfect for Simeone. And he is one of those players. So yeah, I think he would have suited them perfectly. But yeah, if you look at it, he has got the goal scoring right now. Euro's top five leagues, there's only Kane and Mbappe with more.
Is it then because I made the comparison with Osimhen, who is just a goal scorer. You know, you don't want Osimhen anywhere outside the penalty box, do you? Mm-hmm. You want him right there, either scoring with his head or otherwise. Is it almost a distraction that Lautaro does so much more than that?
I think it can be sometimes. But I think if we're talking about in terms of why he's like of less interest in transfer rumours, I think it's because of his situation. Because we all know that he's going to sign a new deal with Inter. So that's coming up. Having said that, as you've pointed out, Osimhen has signed a new deal with Napoli this summer, this winter. But that has made it more likely that he will leave rather than less likely because it contains a release clause. It brings more clubs into the picture because it's a lower release clause at about 130 million than De Laurentiis was asking for last summer, which was 200 million, which completely knocked like pretty much every club in the world that wasn't Saudi out of the picture. Whereas for Osimhen, Premier League clubs are involved when it comes to this summer. You know, they're definitely at the table when it comes to bringing Victor Osimhen. The thing with Lautaro, I think he's a very different player, but I would compare him a little bit to Milinkovic-Savic, because he was a player who was brilliant in Serie A, absolutely brilliant. But he was always more rated in Serie A than he was rated outside Serie A. Go back to what we said about Lautaro and him not particularly shining at the World Cup. If you watch Inter every week, you will know exactly how good Lautaro is.
Yeah, astonishing.
Whereas outside, I don't really think there's that appreciation of it. So the problem, well, it's not necessarily a problem, definitely wasn't a problem for Lazio as they held on to him for so many years, and it isn't a problem for Inter now as they want to hold on to Lautaro. But you look at Milinkovic-Savic, for all those years, while he's incredibly productive, hitting double figures in terms of goals and assists, doing his thing in both boxes, because he was only really appreciated as being as good as he is in Italy, who's got the money to buy him there? No one. And even less so, I think, with the changes in Italian law that Nicky was telling us about recently. It's very, very difficult for an Italian club, even if Inter were willing to sell him to a fellow Italian club, to sell him there. Like no one would have the money. Like Juventus wouldn't have the money, for example. And those outside, where the real money is in the Premier League, they're not really convinced of his quality.
I don't think you realise how many people have been off-put with Lautaro because of the World Cup. You know, he was dropped, second game? I think after the second game, I think he had 14 shots without scoring then. and he was dropped. Julian Alvarez came in. And I think a lot of people watch those times and say, oh, he's good enough for the Premier League if he does it at the World Cup. That's a really myopic view.
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense, does it?
It doesn't make sense, but it is legitimate in the sense that that's how people view things. Lautaro's just doing so much. And look, I think the big point here is he doesn't need to leave. This Inter side, I think, are brilliant. They've got a phenomenal manager. I think an underrated manager in himself as well. Inter aren't a Napoli. Napoli are a club where you go as a player, you know that you're not going to stay there past three, four years. You're going to get sold and you're going to look for a big move. I think Inter are bigger in the sense that you know you can stay there. You can compete at the top of Serie A every single year. You can compete now in the Champions League under Inzaghi every single year. I think it's a great position for any player to be in. Lautaro doesn't need to leave Inter. I think he's going to be a lifer there. I don't think he'll leave. I think he'll sign a new deal. I think he'll be there for the rest of his career.
I guess that's a question. If you're Lukaku, who, like, obviously they still speak, do you wish you'd taken the same route as Lautaro? Because he had that unconditional love. He was playing the best football of his career. And now he's backed himself into a point, especially as we said with that change in the finances in Serie A with tax obligations for overseas players. I mean, he can't stay in Italy. Lukaku's almost backed himself into a move to Saudi next summer, hasn't he?
But I think he's so spoon-eyed for the Premier League, Lukaku. I think he's got that chip on his shoulder that he feels criticised and undervalued. Mm. And
so his pride made him go back to Chelsea rather than
100%,
logic?
100%, of course. Yeah, I think he feels he needs to justify himself and prove himself in the Premier League. Lautaro, I don't think he needs to do that. I think he can see the bigger picture. Lautaro, I can say, I'm the main man at Inter. That's enough for me. We're a very successful club. We will continue having success. That's fine for me. I think Lukaku wanted to go back, wanted to prove himself to these doubters, these naysayers.
And it's a funny thing, I think, because if you were playing for Inter every week, obviously they're talking about how differently things are viewed inside and outside Italy. I think the San Siro, when Inter are playing at home, is actually something extraordinary. You know, if they're doing halfway well, totally full, the atmosphere's banging. You know, from the minute you walk up to the San Siro, you just see the silhouette and you're like, oh, yeah, this is football, come on. And then you get in there and the atmosphere, if you're an Inter player, like, lifts you as well. It would be an amazing place to play.
And the football is good now as well.
Yeah.
We're not talking some slow, turgid, you know, stereotypical Italian football. Look at the way the Inter player. They can adapt to any style the way that they play. They can break on you. They can have possession as well. They can grind out wins. They can blow teams away. I think it's a great thing to be part of. No need to leave for Lautaro.
And it'll be banging this weekend, of course, because they're playing at home to Juventus. And Juventus dropped points last weekend. You see, as soon as Max Allegri said, yeah, we're in this title race, they're going to drop points at home to Empoli. So that's why this Lautaro goal was so vital, because it put them back on the top of the table, Inter, with a game in hand. And Juventus are in this weird position because obviously their approach to this and Allegri's approach to this game on Sunday would always be wait and see. But do they have to have a bit of a go at Inter? And then, obviously, that is exactly what Inter want.
Well, time for some Bish Bosh, because arguably the inform club team in Europe is PSV in the Eredivisie, because they have not lost a single match all season. In fact, they've only drawn one match all season, and they've won all the other matches. It sounds incredible. It's either that they are, as like I say, the scintillating team in Europe, or the rest of the league is rubbish. And I wouldn't say that about the Eredivisie, would you?
Well,
I'm being honest, they're so far ahead of everybody else.
Ajax are an issue. I think Ajax are all over the place. It's clear. Now, obviously, since John Van Schip became the head coach, they've improved. They've gone up the table. They're back in the mix for European qualification now. They're still miles off PSV, but anyone would be miles off PSV. If you've played 19 games and won 18 of them and drawn the other one, which was, as you say, just a couple of weeks ago against Utrecht, I mean, it's a remarkable record. And I think when you look at Arne Slot, the Feyenoord coach's choice to stay at Feyenoord last summer when he got offered some Premier League jobs, Tottenham very interested. At least part of that was informed by he knew what was coming at Ajax. I think he had a little look across and thought, okay, maybe having become champions, we can create a bit of a dynasty here. We can continue to do well in Europe. I can hang about and then maybe go to the Premier League or wherever else later down the line. But of course, he didn't bank on PSV being this good. Now, PSV did well and spent a lot in trying to keep up with Ajax over these last couple of years. Because if we go back, say, 4 or 5 years, go back to when Ajax got to the semi-finals of the Champions League, and they nearly got to the final of the Champions League, they make such an extraordinary amount of money in that they have this run to the Champions League semi-final that no one expects, because they started in like the second qualifying round that year. They sell two huge players who are pure profit in De Ligt and De Jong. From this position, it is going to take a lot of financial mismanagement to not dominate Dutch football for the next 5 or 6 years. Obviously, that happens largely when Mark Overmars and then Erik ten Hag and Edwin van der Sar go. And, you know, they're kind of recalibrating upstairs. But for PSV at that point to say, okay, we're your traditional rivals and we're going to make it difficult for you. And they did make it difficult for them. They've produced some really good sides over the last couple of years. So I think part of it is their excellence. Part of it is obviously helped by the fact that Ajax are in a bit of a state, but they've still had to take on a really good Feyenoord. And I think if you look at Feyenoord's season so far, in any other season, their league record would be easily enough to be on top of the table. Feyenoord could not be doing any more. And PSV, they still lose players left and right. I mean, you know, they lost players last summer. They lost the best player in the Eredivisie last summer, Xavi Simons. Yep. Exactly. And yet, Peter Bosz, who's also a coach who's been criticised, not least by me,
and me as well. I was going to say,
yeah, there we go. Yeah, Peter Bosz fan club.
I'm not hiding here.
Over his last couple of jobs, and justifiably so, he has a reason to be smug at the moment, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. The style, the way that they've done it is what's most impressive. Unbelievably aggressive sides, 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3, play with those inverted wingers that everyone seems to like at the moment. I think they were I think they got very lucky when Bakayoko did not end up going to the Premier League.
Yes.
The fact that he stayed, yes, and he's been such a key player, there's probably not many more exciting players in the Eredivisie than him. You know, I'd probably say him and Santi Jimenez, you two. So they kept him, and they've played this style, I think, that is extremely aggressive based upon winning the ball back very high up the field. If you look at all their numbers, they are winning the ball back high up the pitch a lot more than anybody else. The number of turnovers they're getting as well, remarkable. And I think they're blowing teams away in that sense. It's a lot for teams to cope with. They're having a lot of shots on goals. I looked at as well that they're actually, I think it's about 5 shots more per game than they were averaging there under Ruud van Nistelrooy. And that was a good side under van Nistelrooy as well. That was not a bad side at all. But Bosz has improved literally everything at that team. And they're going to win it at a canter. If they can maintain this, absolutely, it's difficult to do so. But the way they're playing right now, it looks like they're going to win it at a canter.
I imagine that Peter Bosz is saying, well, the reason I'm so smug, Mr. Brassel, is because you laughed when I said I did not have a plan B. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that. Right, okay. Infamously at Dortmund.
Well, infamous, you say that. I don't have a tactical plan B. Plan B is to do plan A better.
I mean, it's a great quote.
Well, it's not a bad one, is it? Particularly when you're top of the league at a canter. I wonder whether he has been underestimated, not least for that quote, but like you were saying a moment ago, Feyenoord didn't see him coming, at least not doing what he's doing at PSV at the moment.
No, absolutely. And I think he's not deviated from that quote that you've just said. I think that's the remarkable thing. What David was saying about their commitment to being really aggressive, exactly what bit him on the arse at Dortmund and Leverkusen and Lyon. And it's just like, it's as if it never happened. He's just turned up and he's like, yeah, I'm going to do exactly the same thing, but just a bit better.
And which I quite admire as well. I like it when you stick to your philosophy, no matter what. I think when a manager or even a player loses their identity that got them somewhere.
He's fun Mourinho. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'd say that, yeah.
Yeah, why not? Let's go with that, yeah.
But PSV have got a date with Destiny on Saturday night with the aforesaid Ajax.
Yeah, they do.
The Clásico.
And this is huge for Ajax, of course. If his papers come through in time, then Jordan Henderson might be able to make his Ajax debut. We'll have to wait and see. I would imagine they won't start him for this because it will be like harem scarum. And if we go back earlier in the season to when it was really falling apart for Ajax under Maurice Steyn, they, of course, managed to stretch the misery due to crowd trouble. They managed to stretch the misery of losing 4-0 at home to Feyenoord over what, 4 days, I think it was. You know, they start losing to them on Sunday lunchtime, end up losing to them on Wednesday afternoon in an empty stadium. And it was humiliating. It was absolutely humiliating. So, look, they know they're 21 points behind. They can't catch them. But they want to qualify for Europe. And they want to get themselves in a position where they can just hold their heads up, really, after a really, really poor season. Now, the thing is, they have improved, but I think there is a limit to how far Ajax can improve because just the recruitment was really what kippered them this season. Like, Sven Mislintat did a terrible job, and henceforth, they got one of the reasons they got rid of
him. Imagine my shock, Sven Mislintat.
And so,
some Arsenal fans applauding right now.
Yeah, exactly. Swinging their shirts around their heads. But I think Van Schip has done very well to coach those players into some sort of serviceable place. However, I think the real victory for Bosch this season, and they're definitely the favourites for this, every big game they've stood up this season, qualified from the Champions League group, despite taking that whacking at Arsenal early on as well. So their ability to recover from disappointment is quite impressive. But I think if we're drilling down into what Bosch has been able to do, his individual coaching, I think, has really improved, like Bakayoko, for example, who is a really fine player and will go on to do very well in the Premier League when he goes there. But in the meantime, he's definitely benefited from being coached by Bosch. And you can say that about other players. You can say that about Tillman. You can say that even about someone experienced as Luke de Jong, who's scoring left and right, although, you know, that's says a lot for the collective strength of them.
I think Veerman's somebody who we've seen
definitely
go above and beyond. I think everybody kind of maybe had an idea of his
of
level.
Was,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he's gone beyond that. I know he's created the most chances in the Eredivisie this season. And he's been phenomenal.
I mean, to cover that gap left by Xavi Simons, it's just impossible. He's been one of the best players in the Bundesliga this season, but they've managed to do it. They've managed to get better without him, which is remarkable. And when you think of like some of the signings that they've done quite well to get, and I think Armel Belakotchap, for example, he's very promising
I think he's a fantastic defender. I think he was really doing a disservice at the time that he arrived at Southampton, the way that they were set up and what have you.
Agreed.
The manager that they brought in at the time. I think he's potentially a top European centre-back.
But like, I agree. And like Bosch has only had him for like 2.5-3 games because of fitness concerns. So the players they brought in to help him, he hasn't really been able to use. So it has been about, I don't know, it's like David Moyes at West Ham, really, in his second spell, just working with players and thinking, I can get more out of this player, which, you know, is the ultimate triumph of coaching, really.
But what a time to play Ajax, nevertheless. 10 unbeaten. It proves, or it's likely to prove to be, a, you know, hard-fought battle between the two teams, this Der Klassiker. But neither of you are going for it for your game of the week, are you? Neither of you?
We're not.
Interesting. So it is that time when we ask you, can you recommend a game of the week for us then? Better than Der Klassiker? Andy, you're looking at me as if, of course I can.
I think we're heading for Sunday night multi-screen. Just get all your screens out. I mean, we already said it's going to be...
A mobile phone screen?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Borrow a child's laptop is going to be that sort of business. Tablet as well. I think we've already talked about Saturday night and Ajax versus PSV. We've talked about Sunday night where we've got Inter versus Juventus, which is going to be great. Elsewhere on Sunday night, Lyon versus Marseille, the two busiest teams in the transfer window. Now, we're recording this on a Thursday. By the time you listen to this, both of these teams might have a few more players because they're going to be busy right until deadline. Lyon need a reshape. They're getting it. But now they've got to actually start winning some games because they've lost the last two in the league as well. Lyon and Marseille absolutely hate each other. It's going to be a big atmosphere. No away fans, of course, after what happened to them between them in when the game was originally planned for the first game at the Velodrome back in October. But I would say Lyon will end up pulling away from the relegation zone, but this is a huge game for them. And Marseille will want to grasp the opportunity to embarrass them. And Marseille, in an administrative sense, in the sense of the relationship between the fans and the board, they're not in a great place either. So whoever loses this is going to be massively, massively under the cosh from their
Which
fans.
Is the bigger club, Marseille or Lyon?
Well, Marseille historically, because they've won a Champions League, and they're the only men's team in France to have won a Champions League. So I don't think you can really argue with that. But yeah, they would absolutely love to make it more difficult for Lyon. So I think here, it's going to be a really satisfying fair either day. So really, you need to go to somewhere in old Lyon, if you'll allow me to food fantasize, for a menu du jour. I think you need the full three courses before this. So I think you're going for an onion soup. You go for andouillette, pig's gut sausages for main, or like my preference would be a nice sort of pavé steak. I think that would be good. And yeah, something with praline in it for pud, because it's Lyon after all.
I'm glad we know the food for that game, because we definitely don't know how both sides are going to line up. Yeah, exactly. There's so much going on in the market with both those clubs. We do not have a clue how they're going to line up, especially in attack.
It's like Nemanja Matic is going, well, I'll play if the coach asks me. But that mainly is the plan when you're signed. Yeah. He signs you and he wants you to play. Yeah.
I just can't wait to see what the Lyon front three is.
So what would you go for?
Yes, we'll definitely know the lineups of in my game, because it's, you know, it picks itself. So I'm going for Real Madrid against Atletico Madrid, also on Sunday evening, 8 o'clock. Tasty. And that's not even the food. This is the actual game. So Real Madrid have got a game in hand, which they'll play against Getafe on Thursday evening, which is, it's in Getafe as well. Bordalas will. Please, I mean, this is his meat and veg, trying to get one over a Barcelona or a Real Madrid Atleti. This is what he lives for. So Real Madrid are not going to have an easy game on Thursday against Bordalas. We'll see how that one goes. But yeah, Sunday, 8 o'clock, Real Madrid and Atleti. And second versus third. And yeah, I mean, it's Madrid derby. It's in the current guise as well. This could go either way. We've got, you know, Antoine Griezmann, you know, world-class right now, world-class form. It's going to be a big factor there. And yeah, this one's a must watch.
The Madrid derby versus the Clásico, which is the most must watch?
You can watch both.
I've, not at the same time.
I've got opinions on this. I don't think El Clásico is nowhere near where it was peak Pep Moo. I think it's very much now what I'd like to call a social media derby. I think there's a lot of people talking about it on social media and what have you, and fans on there who are berating each other and trying to troll each other and what have you like that. But in terms of the spectacle of the game itself, I think the Madrid derby's far better. I think there's a lot more bitterness there right now.
That's what we're there for, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In the ground, the bitterness is there. And so, yeah, that's it. And in terms of food, I'm also going for something very satisfying as well.
I hope so.
Yeah. So I think before I've recommended chorizo with red wine. Yes. This time I'm gonna go chorizo a la sidra. So chorizo with cider.
Oof.
Get it in the pan, bit of cider in there, some nice onions as well, and really get the juices flowing.
David Villa coming round yours for dinner, is he?
Oh, mate, I'd love that. Pour it the old Asturian way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you for listening to On the Continent. Join us again tomorrow for a special Deadline Day edition of Ask OTC, where we'll be answering all of your questions about the biggest transfer news from the world of European football. That episode will be in your podcast app mid-morning, once all the overnight faxes have come through, of course. Make sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode.
On the Continent is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.